Hi, everybody. I'm Lauren Van Hamert, and this is Beltline to Broadway, where we talk about the theater from inside the Beltline in Raleigh, North Carolina, where I am, to the bright lights of Broadway and beyond. I need to ask you all to do me a favor and click on that subscribe button so you don't miss any of my candid conversations and interviews with Broadway insiders and theater makers across the globe. On December 27th, President Trump signed H.R. 133, part of which includes the Save Our Stages Act, into law. The legislation provides billions of dollars of relief to arts venues, organizations, museums, and cinemas. But who is eligible for the monies? How much monies will be allocated, and how will those monies be distributed? Arts North Carolina's executive director, Nate McGackey, just might have some of those answers. McGackey and I spoke earlier this month on the live chat. Here's part of that conversation.
When we did speak back in May, and that was just a few months after the shutdown. And at that time, it was estimated that the loss to the arts community due to COVID was going to be like $32 million, and you estimated it was going to be double that because of the number of responses the impact survey had at that time. So what's the most current data statewide?
So the last time I looked at the survey data, we were closing in on $90 million in reported losses. And I think that that number is weak, is low. For a couple reasons, one of which is that the number has ticked up slower and slower. And I think that there's just a reporting fatigue, right? Like we all have answered those surveys about how bad is it over and over and over again. So when you cancel one more show, you just don't feel like going back to that survey. Mm-hmm. The other reason that I feel like it's probably double or more than that $90 million number is that a few months ago, the Brookings Institute did a report on just looking at the months of April through July, and they were looking at the entire creative industry, both for-profit and nonprofit, across a wide range of fields, not just performing and fine arts. But the entire creative industry took $150 billion loss, which was a 9% drop in sales, and 31% loss on jobs during those first 3 months. In North Carolina, we saw similar numbers on the drop in sales and similar percentages on job loss. But when you look at what the national impact was on fine and performing arts sector, it was three times as much on sales, and the job losses were just astronomical, right? Like, so basically one out of every two jobs was gone. So if you take those numbers and just take that to what we know about the North Carolina arts sector, the nonprofit arts sector, it's $100 million in lost sales in just the 4 months, plus as much as 20,000 lost nonprofit fine and performing arts sector jobs. So that's 20,000 unemployed North Carolinians in the arts. So if you take that 4 months and kind of project that over to where we are now, I think we're easily at $200 to $250 million in lost sales statewide. And that's just the nonprofit sector. And that's not even counting the music halls and the dance halls. And I mean, there's a lot of for-profit arts that we don't think about as part of our sector, but that really is part of the performing arts as well.
We're going to get to Save Our Stages because that's the most recent legislation. But last time we spoke, 46% of our arts organizations did not think they would survive COVID. Now that number, according to the most recent survey I just saw earlier this evening, it's about 21%. Is that because you have more people that have answered the survey at this point? Or is that because the arts are benefiting from some of the funding programs, financial assistance programs?
I think that, because back when we were looking at half of the entire sector wasn't sure that they were going to survive. That was back in April, May. Nobody knew whether or not they were going to survive. A lot of things happened that made some major impacts. PPP loans were extensively taken by the nonprofit sector. We are all waiting for those to be forgiven, but there's absolutely no reason to believe that they won't. And actually, in this relief bill that got signed into law right before the new year, it actually, any loan under $150,000, like within the next month, it's going to be a one-page form with like four questions on it: name, rank, serial number, how much did you borrow, and it's forgiven. So they're real. So the Congress is really trying to expedite the forgiveness process. So I think that gave people a footing. The other thing that happened is that people had a chance to plan, right? Like when all of a sudden, you know, your entire earned revenue model is gone. Not to mention at that point, the stock market was in much more of a free fall or much more of an unknown, and that has bounced back, and that's helped to support donors, particularly major donors, to continue their giving. I just read a Times article the other day. I know for me personally, anecdotally, I haven't heard about a lot of drops in giving. I think Times said it was giving was down by 14% nationally, but I think regionally that might be different here and there. There obviously is some giving trends that are moving more towards hunger and homelessness for obvious reasons and unemployed. But by and large, donors have stuck with the arts and they've, you know, stepped up in some major ways. So that's been really helpful. And we planned, right? Like we had a chance to see the donors didn't go away. We had the PPP money. We figured out how we're going to do it. Unfortunately, that probably meant a lot of job losses and a lot of layoffs. Some organizations going more dormant. Some are trying to find ways to do whatever programming they can to stay engaged with their communities. So obviously, we're not in the midst of a art sector that's thriving. But I think that by and large, the organizations have said, okay, well, here's our plan, right? Here's how we're going to get through to the end of this year or to the end of next quarter, through the next quarter. So that's brought back some sort of optimism about the survival, though I don't think anybody is looking for, you know, 5 months from now, we're going to be exactly where we were pre-COVID. You know, that we're still only partway through a very long road.
There is some hope. President Trump just signed, it's a $2.3 trillion spending bill, and it included $900 billion in pandemic relief. I think a lot of people are familiar with Save Our Stages. A lot of people are familiar with PPP loans. And of course, the federal unemployment programs that we've been seeing, all of that is covered under this legislation. How does this money trickle down to our local stages, our regional stages in our state?
I think it probably is a little easier to get a sense of it to start with a little bit of history. To kind of back it up, I don't think you can talk about Save Our Stages really unless you're talking about NEVA, which is the National Independent Venue Association. And really that is an amazing success story of grassroots advocacy. That organization did not exist in February of 2020. After COVID hit, by the end of March, they were just starting to get together. And they mobilized a website. They came around that Save Our Stages idea, that hashtag that we have seen everywhere, starting in late March, all the way through right up until this week. And they very quickly found themselves supporting a piece of legislation that was called the Restart Act. You don't hear much about the Restart Act now. It had a decent amount of, actually a big amount of bipartisan support in Congress. The problem with the Restart Act was that it was basically did for all small business, and by small business, they mean under 500 employees. So that's some pretty big businesses by what we would consider a small business. All businesses under 500 employees, that this act would do what it's doing for the Save Our Stages, which is 45% of lost 2019 revenue. So it was a massively expensive bill. And as such, it had very little chance of actually moving through, even though it had some bipartisan support. But they supported and said, this is what we need. And they very effectively kind of came around this idea and said, this is a solution to the problem. In July, working with Senator Klobuchar, who many of you know, ran for the Democratic nomination president, as well as Republican Senator Corn, they came around this bill, which was kind of the Restart Act, but specifically designed for independent live performance venues. And in their head, this was about music venues and dance halls, right? Like this was not I think once Senator Schumer got involved, the idea of it supporting Broadway became much more prevalent. But initially, this was really thinking about these mom and pop locally owned venues, and that were devastated by the pandemic. And I think that this is one of the harder things, is that as I have conversations with folks in the nonprofit realm, and we'll talk a little bit more about the bill, but that it does lean with a little bit of favoritism for the for-profit industry, but that's because the for-profit industry has actually lost a considerably larger portion of their revenue, right? So they didn't have donors to turn to, they didn't have donations to keep up. They went from 100% of their revenue to 1 or 2% of their revenue, and they didn't have any kind of donor. Not to mention, it was much more difficult for a lot of outside of PPP for these for-profit ventures. Some states there were programs for for-profit businesses, but the nonprofits were able to access much more funds. When the bill first came out in July, it required 70% of all revenue to be from live events, which pretty much ruled out most performing arts nonprofit organizations, because most performing arts nonprofits have somewhere between 40 to 60% of their revenue coming from donations. So this would have excluded them. Arts North Carolina started working with basically the other state advocacy organizations across the country, as well as Americans for the Arts, who we work very closely with, started talking with NEVA, some other national arts advocacy partners. And it became a conversation where we were working for a whole lot of things, the unemployment, the PPP, funding for the NEA, that was all still ongoing work. But then there was also this work of support for the Save Our Stages Act. Now that this was a very, a live bill and was starting to pick up some bipartisan support, it also really touched on a lot of the talking points that we brought forward already. The main thing was fixing that 70% of all revenue to find a way to expand that to include more nonprofits. Back in August, we were really excited. Senator Tillis signed on as a co-sponsor of the bill. As a matter of fact, I was talking with his staff just a few days before this bill made it onto the Senate floor. And this was like after the PPP second draw, Save Our Stages was his number two priority. So it was something that he had heard from the nonprofit and for-profit sector enough from this state that he recognized that there was a real need. And I think there was a lot of that feeling across the Senate. Now, in October, Heroes Act 2.0, they had done the first Heroes Act back in May, passed the House, went nowhere in the Senate. In late September, early October, they passed Heroes Act 2. It was basically a wish list for everything we wanted. It included $10 billion for Save Our Stages. It included the unemployment extensions we were looking for, the second round of PPP, a lot of other things that I won't go too into, but it was really like almost everything on our checklist was there. And it was 70% of earned revenue. So we made that dent, we made that change. So now a lot more nonprofits were included. But at that time, it was still primarily venue operators and producers. So it would be so there was that question of, is a symphony orchestra a producer? Is a, because it was obviously very geared towards venues and the music industry and maybe Broadway, but not really thinking about the nonprofit sector. So then by December, when that bill came out, it was $15 billion because they expanded the money, but they also expanded who was included, which was actually specifically putting in the wording for performing arts organizations, museums, and cinemas, but not like AMC and Regal cinemas. Like, we're talking about your mom and pop independent cinemas. And what it's worded as in the bill is grants for shuttered venue operators. So that will probably be the title that the Small Business Administration rolls out. We're thinking that we're going to see that guidance come online probably either right before or right after MLK weekend on the 18th.
Circling back around to cinemas, I know people just love the Rialto. Are we talking about small cinemas like the Rialto that's included in this?
That is exactly what we're talking about. So I'll kind of dive in here, and I know everybody's kind of heard a lot about this, so I'll kind of move through it relatively quickly. But really, you need to be operating. You can't have started your organization after the pandemic. You have to have already been in business. Your gross earned revenue only has to have lost more than 25% in one single calendar quarter. So you can't just pick 12 weeks. You have to do an actual January through March, April through June, et cetera. Now, the one thing, and this is something that's really important, is that the wording within the bill says that an eligible entity that gets a Save Our Stages grant, cannot receive a PPP loan. Now, of course, that begs the question, if you get a PPP loan, then can you get a Save Our Stages grant? That's one of the things that we're waiting for that guideline to come out on. It seems pretty clear to me that the legislative intent is that, no, you can't get a forgiven PPP loan and get a Save Our Stages grant, but we're waiting for the guidance to come out from SBA so we know for absolutely sure. And then, and they did make several efforts to try and keep it, you know, they were trying to make sure that it was professional organizations, but also not corporate, right? So no organization that is traded, no business that's traded on the stock exchange can be used. You can't receive more than 10% of your gross revenue from the federal government. You can't do porn is basically, it's a very fancy language to say, you know, no live sex acts. It can't be of an excessively sexual nature. That does not mean that if you do a production of hair 4 years ago that you're disqualified. We're talking about, like, you know, really seedy stuff. And then this language that you can't be more than two of the following three, which is, you know, operate in more than one country, operate in more than 10 states, or have more than 500 employees. So yes, there will be some, maybe some chains of venues that will qualify under that. But that really, those massive, you know, AMC, Live Nation, Regal Cinemas, they're not going to fall under this. Now, I know that, you know, specifically to your audience, the live performance venue, performing arts organizations and producers, really, this is kind of where most of our folks fall into. You do need to have 70% of your earned income, your earned revenue coming from tickets and admission charges or production fees, which we right now are considering rental revenue, right? So we don't know that for sure. We're waiting for that SBA guidance, but rental revenue probably counts in this as well. Concessions, merchandise, et cetera. You have to advertise your event. You can't, you know, there has to be some kind of online or print media. It doesn't necessarily say give you a bare minimum. You don't have to have print and online, but you have to be promoting it somehow in the world. You got to charge some kind of admission for folks to get in. And then this next one is where a lot of the community theaters very well may get tripped up. And that's that you have to fairly pay staff and performers. So we're waiting to see exactly what that means. I know we've got a lot of community theaters that may not pay their artists, but they do pay, say, directors or designers or an executive director, an artistic director. And so, you know, obviously that didn't all get ironed out in the bill. And so the Small Business Administration is going to be working that. So that's something we're keeping a very close eye on, is exactly how that gets interpreted. But they were trying to craft the bill so that it was professional venues at all. Like, all of this was helping professional organizations. It does have to be pretty obvious that you have an audience area and a stage area. You have got to have at least two of those positions. It's sort of weird for me to see how, like, someone in Washington is going to define what a professional theater is. But yeah, I mean, I guess if you've got somebody running, you know, sound and a stage manager and someone selling tickets, it's a show, right? So, and then, but they do require that you have some kind of mixing equipment, a PA system, and the lighting rig. There is a second option that I've only recently kind of been looking at, is that you can also have a venue that sells admission to an event 60 days in advance and pays the artist either a percentage or a contract or some other mutually beneficial arrangement. I think this is more specifically for those venues that may not necessarily have mixing equipment and a lighting rig, but that are running a professional engagement where the artist is taking a percentage of the box office. So that would be included too. But I'm not thinking that there's going to be a lot of nonprofit performing arts sort of scenarios in that. I could be wrong. The surprise for me was that museums got added into this, which I think is fantastic. There's two caveats on museums. So while all the other groups can be for-profit, nonprofit, or even government operated, museums have to be what is called a relevant museum. And what part of being a relevant museum by federal statute is that you are a nonprofit. So the museums have to be nonprofits, and they have to meet the federal definition of a museum, which is that you are displaying items in an enclosed area for public and cultural and, you know, public good, basically. And you have to have an auditorium. You have to have something with real fixed seating. You can't just set up chairs. You have to have some kind of defined space that has regular scheduled programming. So there are a lot of museums that won't qualify for this. And, you know, I know of some museum operators that are really wishing that they had an auditorium in their space now, but they don't. But they're going to be able to access the second round of PPP. Talent agents are going to be taken care of in this. I don't think that a lot of folks necessarily thought about talent agents who take a percentage, right? Like their work just went poof overnight. So that's going to be really crucial for them. And then movie theaters, like we said, is going to be like the Rialto and those small independent theaters that are usually showing more independent films and things like that. That I will say, and this is kind of an ongoing theme, you can see down, you know, we can talk about what equates to a full-time employee, but I think the most important thing about the calculations, and this is throughout that legislation, is that you're not being penalized. You don't have to count PPP money that you got as part of your revenue. As a matter of fact, if you're a for-profit business and you went to file your taxes, you don't need to count your PPP money as part of your revenue. Or if you got a grant that was CARES Act money, you don't have to count that as part of your revenue. So all of that 9.4 million or the money that came through United Arts from the CARES Act, all that CARES Act money is not gonna hurt you in your calculations for Save Our Stages. I think it's really important to remember that $15 billion is a whole lot of money, right? So when you think about, I think at the end of the first PPP round, like every single nonprofit arts organization in the entire country got like $8 billion of PPP money. So $15 billion for only per, you know, like this is still a whole lot of money for a sector. So I think it's gonna be able to stretch, but the reality is that we don't know. There is a priority structure and it is geared more towards those for-profit organizations that I was talking about earlier that lost 90% or 70% of their gross revenue, right? So in the first 2 weeks, they're only gonna award money to those organizations that have lost 90% of gross revenue, not just earned, but total gross revenue. So that would include your donations, and that's gonna count out a lot of nonprofits. The next 2 weeks is gonna be those with 70% losses. Exact same kind of thing, probably gonna cut out most nonprofits out of that. There may be a few that have lost that much and their donations don't make it up, but this is really gonna be for the for-profit. But there is in the law, you can only spend 80% of the funding in that first 28 days, which means that there has to be at least, I think it comes out to about $3.5 billion. And there's never been a $3.5 billion grant program for the arts. And probably most of the organizations that are left at that point are gonna be nonprofits. So we're really hopeful that there's gonna be still, that there's plenty of dollars in this program. And, you know, and of course we're watching Georgia tonight to see what's the likelihood that there'll be more dollars that could go into this program. So after that initial 20 days, there'll be at least 20% of those dollars left through the entire period. At least $2 billion of it has to go to 50 full-time employees or less, right? So they did make sure that there was a carve out for those smaller organizations because they wanted to make sure that it didn't just get drained by the big guys, and no more than 5 affiliates. So as we, you know, I don't have a crystal ball, and I don't work at the Small Business Administration. So I'm just a lighting designer who learned how to do contracts and now I read legislation. But that is what I know. So I'm feeling very confident that there will be enough dollars left. Now, of course, the big question is how much do we get, right? So that initial grant will be the lesser of 45% of your gross earned revenue from 2019, which we think is going to include rentals as well as ticket sales, merchandise, et cetera, or $10 million, right? So for most of us, that's going to be 45% of our earned revenue. There are, if you weren't in operations on January 1st of 19, they're going to figure it out. They're going to take an average of your monthly and prorate it. So they're going to find that number and give you 45% of what that number would be. So if you happen to go into business on January 15th or February 28th or whatever of 2019, you're going to be taken care of. But this is going to be where it gets interesting is, and we're assuming that this is going to take place on April 1st, though we don't know this for sure, is that after this initial round of grants goes out, then they're going to come back and you're going to have the ability to apply for a supplemental grant. So if you have can show that really the quarter that we're in now from January to January 1 until March 31st, that you have lost more than 30% of your total revenue compared to the same quarter in 2019, you're eligible for a second grant equal to half of your initial grant. So, you know, that could be, so you're talking about could be easily 55, 60% of your total 2019 earned revenue between the two grants, though your total of both the grants can't equal more than $10 million. Just to kind of wrap up, the grants have to be used by the end of this year for the initial grants. That additional grant, you got until June 30th of 2022 to use. Allowable expenses include basically everything that you could spend PPP money on, but you can also get ready to mount your next show, right? So you can spend it on advertising, you can spend it on travel, you can spend it on capital expenses. So the hope is that we can use these dollars not only to survive, but to start to thrive as we come into September and October, and God willing, an audience that's ready to come back to our spaces. You cannot take this money in by real estate. You can't make political contributions. You can't loan it out to other people. So you can't loan it out to your actors or loan it out to your staff. You have to use it as the entity. And just know that there's going to be a lot of paperwork requirements on this. Obviously, this is a large grant program. They're going to require you to keep your payroll records for the next 4 years, other records for 3 years. There's going to, you know, you're going to feel audited. There's going to be reporting so that there is going to be a certain weight on this. I will say, and it's not as much of a problem because of the way the dollars got distributed in North Carolina, but for all the CARES Act money that came out in the first round, and that there were a lot of states that were in this mad scramble to get that spent before December 30th of 2020, that has now been extended out until the December 31st of 2021. So there's a little, so that those that additional dollars that some states, North Carolina, I think we have spent every dime of it. But for anybody that's wondering or has friends in other states, if the state has not spent all of their CARES Act money or the municipalities, they've got another year to do that. So there's more flexibility there.
It's a lot of information. I will put the link to Arts North Carolina's website as well so people can continue to get up-to-date information. We've spoken a lot about the venues, the nonprofits, the for-profit businesses. The last time we spoke back in May, we talked a little bit about the artists, the theater makers, the workers who have been furloughed, some have been a lot, have been let go and fired. And then those people working as freelancers, some of them have been out of work for almost a year now. None of this funding that we've talked about yet covers those individuals, but the unemployment assistance does, correct?
Right. Yes. So, So on the unemployment, the first thing that I want to say is I got to remember all my acronyms without my slide. The Federal Pandemic Unemployment Compensation, or the FPUC, is got reinstated. That was the $600 that ran out at the end of July. That is back for 11 weeks. Yes, even though Trump signed it late, what I'm understanding is that will be paid retroactively. So we will get 11 weeks for any weeks filed, any benefit weeks filed between January 1 and March 14. So those 11 weeks will be paid. In addition to that program, we have been working for something called the Mixed Earner PUA, which we recognized that there was a problem. Say if you worked at an accounting firm for 30 hours a week, but then 10 to 15 hour weeks, you were a working actor and maybe made $6,000 or $10,000 or $12,000 a year. There was no way for you to claim all of your revenue. We didn't quite get the fix we wanted, but if you are somebody that has made more than $5,000 on 1099s like that on your last tax return, then you can get an additional $100 a week for the next 11 weeks. It's not a lot, but it's something. And we're hoping that if we get that foot in the door, that gives us something to build and expand on, particularly seeing how things go in Georgia tonight and who's going to be running the show in the Senate. So then you get the federal pandemic unemployment emergency compensation or pandemic emergency unemployment compensation, PUC. And what that does is that extends, it used to add an additional 13 weeks onto state benefits. That's now been expanded by an additional 11 weeks. So now you're up to 24 weeks added onto state benefits. I will say that when I talk to my partners from across the country, they think I must be mistaken when I tell them that North Carolina only has 12 weeks of unemployment. Like, I think it's like almost every other state in the union has 26. There might be one or two that had 24 weeks of benefits. We currently have 12. So that they, like, we have people that have run out of benefits, and these programs, like that program was initially designed for 26 weeks of unemployment and 13 weeks to get you to the end of the year. Whereas our folks in North Carolina, we were running out of it in September, October, et cetera. So that program gets an additional 11 weeks. I will say that on that, and also for the PUA, which is for the 1099 workers, you can file claims on it through the 14th. But if you have an open claim, you can, and additional weeks that you're eligible for, you can continue to collect that through April 4th. I think it's all weeks up to April 5th. So I think April 4th is that Sunday that it cuts off. So there's some relief there. And like I said, they extended the PUA. We've been talking about the PUA as unemployment for 1099 and contract workers. It is also unemployment for people that have run out of all other benefits. So if you have run out of your state benefits, and your PEUC benefits, and then your federal extended benefits, which is a whole nother program. And once all of that is dried up and you still are looking for unemployment, you can apply for PUA if you haven't run through your PUA weeks yet as well. So it's out there. It is not nearly enough. And that's something that we're gonna be continuing that conversation at the federal level. I think that we're gonna be having the conversation in the short term at the General Assembly and in the long term at the state and federal level. Because one thing that this pandemic has thrown wide open is we need to rethink how unemployment works. We need to get it updated. We need to make it work for the way people work now, not the way people worked in 1965 and how they get paid and how that works. Honestly, that's the gig economy was created by jazz musicians and not by Uber, but that's gonna finally drive this conversation. And it might be that as an independent contractor, you're paying into your state unemployment tax, but that's how we make the system work. So this is going to be part of our work moving forward. The last thing I will say about individual artists is if you get paid by 1099, apply for a PPP loan, right? So just because you're on unemployment doesn't mean you are a small business. If you work for different companies as a contractor, then you, in the eyes of the SBA, at least in everything that I have read, you are a business and can apply for a PPP loan so that you could be receiving benefits and have that loan forgiven, so that you could be receiving a forgiven PPP loan coupled with your unemployment, and that might make those benefits last a little longer.
We talked about the immediate need for our organizations. Down the road in September, let's assume, once things start reopening, what do you anticipate the needs are going to be?
Part of the conversation that I'm having right now is what is that need, right? Because as we head into the North Carolina, the session, they're going to be gaveling in, legislators from across the state are going to be in Raleigh in the next few weeks, and they're going to be starting a conversation about a state budget. And we don't really know what that's going to look like, because that really depends on how much federal money is going to be continuing to come into the system, And that's going to depend a lot on what? Yes, what's going on in Georgia right now. So we're having that conversation, right? Like, can we talk to the General Assembly about some one-time funding to restart the arts in North Carolina? Because that's going to be the problem, right? So we've kind of sized everything down. We've let people go, put them on furlough, laid them off, shuttered our buildings, right? Like, well, what is it going to take to reopen those buildings? What is it going to take to bring that talent back? Have they gone to a state with different restrictions or lower caseloads, right? Like, have we lost our artists? Have we lost our creative capital? We can't even begin to figure all that out yet. But I think we've got to start having that conversation in a very real way. So part of what Arts North Carolina is looking to do is, how do we support that from a policy initiative, both in funding and restrictions with reopening? Having a conversation about what other resources are needed, what legal resources. I was just having a conversation about a partnership trying to do some more trainings around what's needed from a legal standpoint, in terms of closing down, if that's what you need to do, or reopening, and what are the nuts and bolts of that? And then how do you create a business model that works when maybe you're only getting 80% of your audience? So, but that obviously is going to start with us asking for public dollars, because that's what we do. And I think we've got a really important case that this is an industry that completely shut down, right? Like, you can't get takeout theater, right? Like, there's, and that's not to say that the restaurant industry is not struggling, because they are, and we're going to lose a lot of great restaurants. And I feel that we're going to lose a lot of great performing arts organizations, but we're trying to move us out of stagnation is going to be a really heavy lift. So I think that we're going to be realizing that in August and September.
As we publish this podcast, McGackey let me know that the Small Business Association has issued some clarifications about the Save Our Stages Act. First, the actual name of what we know as Save Our Stages is the Shuttered Venue Operators Grant, or SVOG. The Small Business Association has also released a new priority structure for SVOG. Now, applicants with more than 50 employees will not receive grants for the first 60 days. Since there are still some unanswered questions about the SVOG rollout, I would suggest you bookmark the Small Business Association website. In addition, this March, Arts North Carolina is hosting its first online Arts Day conference, which will connect the community, arts advocates, and lawmakers. This is a great opportunity to find out more about the nuts and bolts of arts advocacy in our state. I'll put links in the episode notes. If you like what you've heard today, please consider subscribing to this podcast, leave us a review, follow us on social media, and visit us online at www.beltlinetobroadway.org. Until next time, I'll see you at the theater.